crazy porks who host this show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork therapy, scatolydibop, shabadooey. You'll revel in hilarity. It's pork therapy.
Okay, Freddy.
I said ready, Freddy, and Mike thought someone named Freddy was here, right?
Freddy's in the studio. Freddy has left the building.
Was you talking about Freddy Krueger? That might be a good thing.
Yeah. Welcome to Pork Therapy.
Yes, welcome to Pork Therapy. Hi.
Hi.
I'm Stephanie.
I'm Mike.
And we're doing a show about relationships from a liberty-oriented perspective, right, Mike?
That is correct. And why?
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 Well, because it's fun. And because we like to giggle, or I like to giggle, and, well, I think the real reason is because relationships are the basis of a voluntary society, and we want to get there, as I'm sure many of our listeners do, too.
Yeah.
And we want to talk about different ways that we think we can get there faster.
And what is a voluntary society?
A voluntary society is a society where people interact with each other on a voluntary basis, and now I'm in the tautology club.
Well, not really. Not really. I mean, I guess that could be a tautology, but it might, if somebody actually thought about those words, it might help them break out of the paradigm that they're in.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So why aren't we in a voluntary society now? Well, do you volunteer to give your money to government, or do they take it by threat of force?
Mm.
Do you volunteer to pay extra money to government when you buy a product at the store? That's called sales tax. Or do you do that by threat of force?
Right.
You know, do you volunteer to send your kids to a government school where they teach what you don't want and the hours are bad?
Do, but they would only do so because they're forced to pay for it.
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
So they don't want to pay twice.
And a lot of people who voluntarily do it don't know that there are options. They don't understand that this is being forced upon them.
Yeah.
And for that matter.
Or have never thought about it before.
It's being forced on everyone because I don't have kids to send to school and I'm forced to pay for it.
Same here.
Yeah. So in other words, we're not by any stretch of the imagination living in a voluntary society, and we'd like to.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So that's what the show is and why we do it.
Yeah. That was a long explanation.
If you guys have any questions you want to ask about any kind of relationship, you can email us questions@porktherapy.com.
Indeed. Or you can go to our website, which is porctherapy.com.
Uh-huh.
And that's Pork Therapy, of course.
Yep.
The name of our show.
Ta-da!
Yay!
So we're going to start this episode with some listener feedback, right?
Yeah, we did. We did an episode a little while ago about talking. It was called Silence of the Porks.
And episode 119. If you want to hear it, you can listen to it on our website.
Mm-hmm. And in that episode, a listener asked a question about how she can start to get herself motivated to talk more. And we talked about a lot of different suggestions.
Of
yeah, ways of talking since we're one of the most talkative couple of people you could probably imagine. So we basically did a show where we talked about talking.
And, how's that for tautology?
Yeah, that and the second one of the show. And we got some feedback on it. So the listener who commented on this episode had an insightful piece of feedback that we wanted to share.
So she says, I disagree somewhat on encouragement to talk for the sake of talking, which was one of my suggestions,
mm-hmm.
kind of like writer's block. And then this listener goes on to say, in my own relationship, we are also both very quiet people in our nature, similar to Lauren. Lauren was the guest on our show.
Mm-hmm.
I've also noticed that we're happier when we're talking more, but what really seems to matter is quality over quantity.
Mm-hmm.
And I would completely agree.
Yeah.
But I think what I tried to say during the episode was not that the more you talk, the better it'll be.
Right.
My point was, if you're having trouble talking, try talking about anything, i.e. talk more, and mm-hmm. eventually some good nuggets will come out of that.
I love that you use the word nuggets. Do you remember that one comment we got like 6 months ago from someone who said, like, oh, there's only one gem in your show.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, that was a tangent. I completely agree with you, Mike. Sometimes, even people who are kind of just quiet by nature, sometimes in order to get the really deep and meaningful conversations flowing, it helps to start off by just talking about kind of whatever comes to mind, and then mm-hmm. maybe something a little bigger will flow from that conversation. Is that what you meant?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I didn't mean that talking for the sake of talking was an end in itself. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a tool to help you get used to talking, and maybe to even help spur more enjoyable talking.
Right. Yeah, and one thing that I just thought of now, Lauren said in that episode at the very end that she was even thinking about talking more to police.
Right.
And in the past, like, she's done some civil disobedience in the past involving, you know, freedom to travel without driver's licenses mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And she's been silent in all of her activism, I guess.
Right.
I've seen her on camera a bunch
right.
of times, you know, being arrested, and she's completely silent. You know, mm-hmm. she goes limp. She makes them carry her. So definitely, I would say, if you're confronted with a cop, then talking for the sake of talking is no good. But I've been kind of rethinking the whole we should be silent with cops thing. I mean, especially when they're off duty. I've been thinking a lot about this lately. And I think that people have a hard time remembering that there's a human being in there and that they can be reached, especially when they're ready to be approached. Like, for instance, maybe they're off duty, you're interacting with them in their personal life instead of when they're wearing the blue costume that they think lets them get away with
right.
all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe they just have never been exposed to these ideas before. Maybe something happened to them in their life. Some violence was done to them, and they're just basically
sure,
repeating that onto other people.
This is the nonviolent communication approach, right? Empathy with them.
It's not just that, but yeah, it's definitely inspired by that.
Yeah. Well, I completely agree that every human is a human, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't collectivize and say everyone who's a cop is a bad person. I mean,
but yet,
that's what
a lot of people do in our community, I think.
Well, collectivization is huge in every genre.
Yeah.
Right?
But I want to point out and draw attention to that because
okay.
a lot of people do that and say that, oh, all cops are bad people. And then it goes along with this meme of don't ever talk to them. And I don't think that's true. Yeah, if they're arresting you and they're trying to get more things to convict you with or make you into a criminal,
I think it's contextual. I mean, if you're off duty and you're maybe an acquaintance of a cop and so you kind of know them a little bit, maybe I agree with you
mm-hmm.
that it's okay to talk to them and maybe try and introduce some ideas of liberty or peace or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think especially when a cop is on duty,
mm-hmm.
just about anything you can say will be used against you.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
Oh.
Yeah. You just said it before me.
Then how does that make it good to talk to cops instead of be as quiet as possible?
No, I was saying that it's that probably if I was in a situation where it was a direct confrontation, like
mm-hmm.
I was being arrested,
right.
I wouldn't talk to a cop then.
I see. Okay.
But I would choose to talk to them more when they're off duty.
Yeah.
And actually, I am planning to do this in my life. I'm just going to let the listeners know right now. I'm going to be doing this more and more. I probably won't video record it because I think that, I don't know how it's going to go, and B, I think it could put them in a posture of setting off...
You know, you could secretly video or audio record them.
I could, but I don't like that. I'd like to let someone know if I was recording them.
Yeah.
And I think that if I was approaching someone with a camera in my hand, the tone would be completely different.
Yep.
Do you agree?
I completely agree.
I mean, it would be nice to have that interaction recorded so that I could go back later and see how I did and
maybe
other people's tips.
Then maybe you want to record it secretly just for your own use and never publicize it and then delete it after you've learned from it. Or hell.
Nah.
And I say that because you can also use, you might be able to use that as evidence of wrongdoing, if there's any.
Yeah, I don't know.
But you might not be able to if you haven't told them.
And hell, I might be more nervous if I knew it was recording too,
okay.
you know? Oh, what am I going to say? This is going to be broadcast to everyone. I do definitely believe in transparency and openness, but I'm going to try this first a few times without recording it and just see how it goes, and then maybe I can...
Exciting. Are you actively going to go out of your way to find an off-duty cop, or do you know some, or how's that going to work?
I know a few, yeah.
Huh. All right, so back to...
So I'll let the listeners know how it goes.
Yeah,
we'll keep updated. I mean, actually, this is something I was kind of thinking of because I had an interaction with a census worker once where I wouldn't say I was rude to her, but I definitely wasn't that polite. Okay. And I didn't really ask any, like, root-striking questions. I kind of just told her, you know, I don't want to talk to you. Go away.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
Right.
And now that I know what I know about communication and that I've been thinking about this stuff a lot more, I think I definitely would have tried asking her some different questions about the nature of her job and doing it in a certain way where I'm showing empathy and I'm connecting with her at the same time. So next time I have the opportunity to do that, I'm definitely going to try. 10 more years, yeah.
For the next census worker.
Well,
there's other opportunities for government to put
there will
its
be
face
plenty
in your
of
life.
Opportunities. Yeah. Yeah. Most of them that I won't ask for, but if they come to me, then I will definitely try them and I will share my experiences.
Good.
Another thing is that I am giving a talk at the Agora IO Unconference.
You are?
Yeah. Which
I just
is,
got
I don't
an
know
email.
If I told you about this.
No, I just got an email from them recently and I didn't see you on the list. Or maybe I just didn't
oh,
see.
Oh, maybe I wasn't on there, but I should be on the schedule up on their website.
I did not go to their website yet. Cool.
I see. I'm probably not a headliner, but but I am giving a talk, and it's about communication.
Oh, sweet.
For advancing the ideas of liberty.
Nice.
So that'll be a very interesting talk. I encourage everybody to attend. And check out agora.io for the schedule and for more about the concept of unconferences and...
What is it? The agorism unconference? What is it?
It's called Agora... IO, which is input output, and nice. it's not really agorism based. Oh, I don't know. I guess it is. Basically, the idea is that it's a virtual meeting, and oh,
yeah,
we just went to the website.
It's a conference with all kinds of speakers and presentations about agorism. But
yeah, related to agorism.
It's not at a location. It happens on the internet, and everyone can participate from their home and watch and ask questions and do whatever.
Which is a fantastic idea.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and it's much bigger than I thought it would have ever got, so it's very cool.
Yeah. And that's George Donnelly's project. He's done a great job promoting it and lining up speakers and all that stuff. It can't be easy to do that, so big shout-out to George. Okay, so should we get into the question?
Yeah, well, not yet.
Okay.
She said, in the feedback, said one more thing, or...
Oh.
One more thing throughout the thing. She said, recently me and my boyfriend moved in together, and for several months, while the quantity of our communication remained the same, the quality greatly decreased. Instead of having in-depth philosophical conversations, our communication shifted to purely logistical. Who's going to do the shopping? Where's the furniture going? Etc. And then she talks about that and ways they are working to solve it, which I'll briefly touch on. But I want to comment on that, and that is... Yeah, I would guess that's common, especially, I don't think we've ever done a show on new relationship energy, but when...
Oh, we've had it on our...
Right, list for
list
a year.
For a while.
when newness is gone, you know, excitement goes away, right? You're talking about philosophy with your new boyfriend when you go on dates or when you hang out, at, you know, for the evening, and you're talking about things that you're passionate about, and he is too, and you're finding out all the stuff you have in common. It's really exciting. And then a year or two later... You're great that you agree, and you probably support each other and whatnot, but you kind of know it, right? You know that he knows that he thinks this way. He knows
so
that
you
think this
way. So
you don't
have to talk about it.
Yeah, so you don't talk about it as much. And now that you live together and you're there 24 hours a day, I mean, you work and whatnot, but you have to talk about things that you never would have really wanted to. Hey, did you clean the toilet or not?
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's part of life. Newness goes away. New and exciting goes away.
It does go away, although I think there are ways to kind of keep that going. You know, like one of the ways, actually, that we talked about on the recent show that this comment is about was, you know, asking each other certain kind of philosophical questions and, you know, having a discussion. And also, I think a lot of it is just kind of making time and putting that up on the priority list. You know, I think you can always get to know someone better because people change and... There's infinite numbers of things to know about people, right? You can always discover new interests and new things about each other.
And people do change over the time, so you can revisit things every now and then. So there's definitely ways. I guess I just wanted to point out that the awesome, exciting, passionate conversations that you have when you're new with someone aren't always there, and you can still have good conversations that aren't passionate, or you don't always have to talk about who's going to take out the garbage.
Yes.
And I do want to comment on one other thing she said, And that is what I think has helped the most. We've started sending each other interesting articles during the day. Then we talk about them at night while we cook dinner together. So while they do something mundane, hey, pass the salt, hey, did you go to the grocery store? They also talk about something that they sent each other during the day. Mm-hmm. This is very similar to what you just said, the philosophical questions or any questions.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having a book that has questions that kind of motivate people to think about in-depth things... Mm-hmm. They see something at work, an article about X or Y, mm-hmm. and they send it to their lover, and then that night they talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I think they also, just in order to get themselves to practice talking more, they've also started commenting on blogs. And she said, like I'm doing right now on yours, Pork Therapy. So that's also good.
We appreciate that comment.
Yeah, absolutely. So they went out and found content, let's say,
uh-huh.
I don't know if it's blogs or media or podcasts or whatever, mm-hmm. that interest them individually,
yeah.
and they just comment on them, so they're starting conversations, and then I'm sure that they go back and talk to each other about them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she might say, hey, boyfriend, I wrote this comment on one blog like we've been doing recently, and they talked about it on a show, hey, and then they might talk about that. Who knows? So it can, like, spur conversation in from many different directions.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess that's all I want to say about her feedback. Thank you for the feedback. Do you want to say anything?
Yeah. No, we definitely appreciate that feedback. And maybe we can revisit that topic in another show.
Yeah.
I'll make a note of it, you know, about relationships becoming, getting stale, I guess, you know, people slacking off in their effort that they put into the relationship.
Yeah, that's actually could be a separate episode from NRE, New Relationship Energy.
That's
true. They're related, but they're not the same.
Oh, see, we got two topics out of this.
Wow.
Well, if you want to hear us do a show about either one of those, you should email us questions@porktherapy.com, especially if you have a little more specific suggestion for us.
Or call us at area code 419-PT-LOVE-4 and let us know what your question is.
Yes. Sorry, I talked over the area code.
419.
Yeah.
Okay, so now our actual question, right? Are we there yet?
I think we're there, yeah.
Okay.
Cool, this is exciting. Okay, so I guess, should I read the question?
Do you want to?
Sure.
All right.
Well, we flip a coin, right?
Flip, 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 flip.
There is no coin.
That was a really high flip.
Ooh, that virtual coin sure does fall slowly. It defies the laws of gravity because it doesn't exist. So who won the coin toss, Mike?
I didn't even look, I don't know.
Okay, well, I will volunteer to read the question. How do you like that?
That works.
Okay, so the question asker says, hey guys, you know, when I heard the theme song the first time, I did some Googling and then I came up empty-handed, so I just assumed the word mensch was actually manch, and that it was some kind of local slang for people from Manchester, which is a city in New Hampshire. Good to finally know. So I guess there are some people out there who are mystified by our theme song, who would have guessed.
Cool.
But we did an episode called Mike is a Mensch
to
explain what that actually means. So you can go back to our website and look at that, porktherapy.com, if you're curious. Okay, so then the question asker goes on. I have a question, and this comes from a confluence of friends who have recently asked similar questions of me, as well as a theme that I've noticed in my own life. In the last month, I've had multiple disconnected friends ask me questions like, if someone loses your trust, should you remain friends? And if someone loses your respect, should you remain friends? My gut reaction has been no, that friendships are voluntary associations, and if you can't trust or respect a person for whatever reason, a fruitful relationship isn't really possible. You don't have any obligation to remain friends.
Can I interrupt and comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I think we did an episode on trust.
Yeah,
somewhat
a couple
recently,
of them.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to say that I think it is possible because there's different ways to trust someone or different things to trust someone about.
Mm-hmm.
If you can trust that, or you can't trust that your friend will ever be on time, you can still trust that he'll pay you back. Right?
Maybe, if he has a track record for both.
That's what I mean. It depends. Mm-hmm. Or suppose a friend who's always late and who's always in debt. Maybe you can trust that they'll never lie. Right?
Right.
Maybe you can trust someone to be loyal as a friend who'll always stand by your side, but they're always late.
Mm-hmm.
Or some other trait. I don't know. So, you know, there's good qualities and bad qualities. Or there's multiple traits which you can trust or not trust.
Mm-hmm.
And if some of them aren't working, you could still have a friendship. And it may be fruitful. And enjoyable, just may not be as nice as some others, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes those qualities of untrustworthiness kind of go together. You know, like people who are who lie also don't pay back their debts and things like that.
Could be. Sure.
But not always, right. You know. I guess I can think of some examples where I've known people who, like, for instance, are always running late. because they're so busy and productive that they're always working on projects and stuff, and they get excited about them. But, you know, in other aspects, they're very reliable since they're so productive. They have money and they pay back their debts and or whatever. Yeah. And they you know, stick up for you and they keep their promises and so forth.
So you can have relationships with them. I think it's contextual. I think it depends on the person and the traits that you value and that they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't quite know what he means when he says, if someone loses your trust, should you remain friends? Or if someone loses your respect, should you remain friends? I think if someone does something so egregious that you say to yourself, oh, I just don't respect them anymore, then you probably wouldn't want to be friends. But,
and if someone,
I mean, are we talking something like they show up 10 minutes late or they, like,
and what if
run over your dog in the driveway or like, what
and
are
what
they?
If they lose your respect by telling an off-color joke? Do you want to end your friendship over that and never see him again? Or
well,
do you
I've
want
ended friendships over stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe it is important to you. I think for me, it depends on, I guess maybe that could be an indicator that they have no empathy to, you know, whatever class of people they slashed in the joke. I don't know, but maybe they're really cruel people and that was an indicator. I don't know, but if it's just a person who, you know, sometimes tells funny jokes, and once they tell, you know, an anti-Semitic joke or something, I'm not going to end my friendship over it.
Right.
I might say, that's not funny, and it's very anti-Semitic, and I don't like it.
And then maybe you'd have a conversation about that with your friend. I would always choose that option, but, you know, if someone's constantly, every day, telling jokes that offend you, and you've told them, and they won't stop.
Yeah, if that's like the level, that's like egregious, almost, right? It's a level of... It's a level issue. Mm-hmm. If it's something I just don't want to put up with, then no, I wouldn't even be acquaintances or somewhat friends with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then the asker continues.
Oh, so then the question asker continues. The last paragraph was saying that he's had multiple people ask him, you know, if someone loses your respect, should you remain friends? And his instinct is to say no.
Right.
But then he goes on, but this has not been a behavior throughout my life. I have a category of friends that someone at some point dubbed a sympathy friend. And then he uses that term sympathy friends later on in the question.
Yeah.
And then he says, now after an audio immersion in pork therapy and real-time relationships and nonviolent communication, that term feels very pejorative to me, but it's the term that I've always used. There are people who are socially awkward, sometimes even a little mentally unstable. They can be very juvenile and at times even embarrassing to be around. But I form friendships with them, at least in part, because I'm reluctant to assert firm boundaries. For example, they might ask me to do something with them that I'm not particularly interested in, but I'm not busy and I'm reluctant to say no, so I'll go. Then, since they don't usually have many friends, I became their favorite person to invite to stuff. So, do you want to talk about
that? Yes, because I think he kind of branches off into a subtopic next.
Okay.
So, see... If you listeners to this podcast right now, just think to yourself of two different friends you have. Pick a friend, and then think of a different friend.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like them the same amount? Do you like the same things about them? Odds are incredibly against that being true.
No, people are individuals.
Yes.
Everyone's so different.
You like some people more than others, probably because your values are more in line, or whatever. Because you value comedy more, and this person's funnier than that person, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, so you have different levels of friends, and an example of that is acquaintances. You might have some people who you might consider an acquaintance, not a friend. And there's probably other words too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Synonymous words. Mm-hmm. So these sympathy friends that the question asker is talking about could be considered friends. Yeah, you don't really like that much what you do with them, and you don't really like them that much, but they're okay to be around, and it's okay to do things with them. Sometimes it's a time killer if you're bored or whatever whatever your reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
That's something, right? No one's hurting anyone. That's not...
Sure.
Yeah, that's doable.
Yeah, and I suppose you could say that if he really didn't want to hang out with these people, he would say no.
Right. Well...
But he does say in his question that he thinks he forms friendships with them, at least in part because he's reluctant to assert firm boundaries, which we'll talk about later.
Right. And he says, I'm reluctant to say no.
Right. So...
So I think... What are you going
to
say?
Well, I wonder why he's reluctant to say no. Does he feel bad for them? Does he empathize with them? Maybe he was, like, a little socially awkward at one point in his life, and he wishes that more people would have hung out with him. Or does he feel like he's doing kind of a good deed by hanging out with them and maybe helping them improve their social skills or meet people.
Or be seen with him. I really don't know.
I don't know.
I think both of those, though, are the source of his problem, if he considers this a problem, and I think he does because he asked a question.
Mm-hmm.
So he's reluctant to assert firm boundaries and to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both of those are just going to hurt him, and they probably are enough that he's at least asking a question now.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go on.
Yes. Well, before we go on, so I just want to say some people answer their own questions.
And yes.
I think he actually did answer his own question within the question, but we'll get to that a little bit later.
That?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So then he goes on. He's talking about the sympathy friends and what they are and why he thinks that he hangs out with them.
Right.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I lost my place. Thanks, Mike. So then he goes on. Occasionally, I've seen these friends deliberately use guilt as a mechanism when I tried to establish boundaries, but mostly I'm the one guilting myself.
So it's a very insightful question. Because they can't make you feel guilt.
Right.
You feel guilt.
Exactly.
They might be pushing the right buttons or pulling levers or whatever, saying the right things that they think will trigger guilt in you. But you're the one who can say, yeah, I feel guilty about that, or say what you want. I'm not guilty.
Yeah.
And
it seems like a subtle distinction, but it's really important.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, someone else can trigger something in you, but they really can't make you feel anything.
Right. It's up to you. And if you firmly believe that, you know, it's valid and appropriate for you to say no or to establish boundaries or whatever it is that you're doing, and they're saying something that makes you second guess it, well, maybe evaluate that. Ooh, they said something. Am I really being valid in establishing my boundaries? Yes, I am. So if you think you're right, then why is there guilt?
Why is there guilt?
Yeah.
Well, guilt is something that comes from culture, right? I think there are a lot of memes that tell people to punish themselves and to feel guilty. And maybe what he needs is just to think about, you know, what is he not, the question asker, what is he not getting that he needs when he feels guilty about saying no to these sympathy friends that invite him to things? Maybe he feels like he's, or he thinks he's not being a good person, right? Maybe he thinks that he's...
By sticking up for himself and making himself feel good or not doing something that makes him feel bad, maybe he thinks he's being a bad person because it might be hurting their feelings, the sympathy friends' feelings.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe he could be concerned about the sympathy friends' feelings. He could maybe be feeling like he's not efficacious, I guess, because he's not doing them the favor of kind of taking them under his wing and teaching them social skills and all that.
I guess.
Maybe
I don't know why.
Maybe he wishes, as we said a few minutes ago, maybe he wishes that
someone
would have done that with him in his past or something. I don't know. I mean, only you know that answer, question asker. But
right.
I would suggest to kind of think about that guilt and what is it? Where is it originating?
Right.
You know? What are you not getting that you're needing? That's kind of triggering this guilt, I guess.
Right. Needs not being met, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, needs not being met. Exactly.
Right.
So then he goes on. These relationships have not been wholly unpleasant, and he's talking about the sympathy friends. I can enjoy their company in moderation. I often find them to be incredibly loyal friends over time in all the ways that really matter. But I've noticed they're often surrounded by friends who don't really respect them and even ridicule and demean them, which I've never done.
Well, he has done it, and he's done it in this question to us. He called them mentally unstable, which might be an objective observation, but he called them juvenile, embarrassing to be around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I form friendships because I'm reluctant to assert firm boundaries, meaning I don't want to, but I do. So all three of those statements are, what did he say here, are ridiculing and demeaning.
I guess he's just being honest with them, but I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying that I don't really enjoy this person. I don't want to hang out with them.
Right.
That's totally fine.
Probably pretty difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be difficult for me.
Yeah.
But I think also it would be advantageous to me in some contexts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
well, I could go spend 2 or 3 hours going to see a movie I don't want to see, paying money I don't want to spend with a person who I'm not going to enjoy their comments about the movie, or I could sit at home and watch the paint dry. Well, I might rather watch the paint dry.
You have wet paint all the time in your house?
I might paint and then watch it dry. Because I don't...
Well, you can't watch the grass grow in winter in New Hampshire, for sure.
Well, if I was embarrassed to be around someone or just didn't enjoy it, you know, they made racist comments or something, I don't know, whatever. whatever it was, or they just, you know, snorted when, or they whistled when they breathed, or whatever it was that bugged me.
Uh-huh.
If I didn't want to be around them, then I think it would be advantageous for me to say, no, I don't want to go to a movie with you, and then sit at home and be bored rather than be annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Hmm. Okay. Well, one thing that I also wanted to comment on was he said he can enjoy their company in moderation, and in all the ways that really matter, they're sometimes incredibly loyal friends.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of just, I don't know, there's a little bit of a contradiction. I can kind of see the tension in what he's talking about, because on one hand, you know, they're kind of awkward, they're a little annoying, they're not really the first person he would choose to spend time with.
Right.
But yet, it sounds like they're grateful that he does spend time with them.
Yeah.
And that when he needs them to be there for him, they are.
Hmm, interesting.
So I can kind of see...
Use, they're a tool for him?
No, I wouldn't say that, but I could see his conflict in his thinking, because, you know, there are some things about them that are good, right? Everyone wants loyal friends, right, that they can depend on, I think.
Yeah, yes, I agree with you. I also kind of read this sentence, or understood the sentence in a different way, and that was, by the sympathy friends being incredibly loyal over time means to me that they value him more than he values them.
Mm-hmm.
They always want to call him, and or if he calls them, talk to him on the phone, or hang out with them, or spend time with him. They're loyal friendships.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't care so much. He'll spend time with him if he's bored, if he has to, whatever. If he can't say no. That's kind of what I got.
Yeah, I did.
So they're like little puppies
who
always want attention or whatever.
Yeah, who want to follow him around.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're very grateful for his attention when he
just
gives
like
it
dogs,
to
wagging the tail.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay, so I'll finish up the question,
yes,
and then we can talk about it a little more. So then his last paragraph is, so I guess my question is nebulous. Are these real friendships? Is the awkwardness my own fault for not being assertive about my boundaries? How do you deal with people who are more enthusiastic about your friendship than you are, but also a little bit emotionally fragile? Any thoughts? Peace. So when I said before that some people answer their own questions, I think he kind of did answer his own question here.
Yeah.
When he said that, is the awkwardness my own fault for not being assertive about boundaries?
Right.
And I think that's the key to answering this question. You know, if you want to hang out with someone a little bit, but not a lot, if that's how much time you want to spend with them just because of how much you enjoy their company, then all you have to do is just say that and don't feel bad about it. Right? If they call you up on a Saturday night, let's say you're sitting at home not doing anything, and they call you up on Saturday night and say, hey, question asker, let's go out to a movie or something.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go play some video games. And, you know, you don't really want to. There's absolutely nothing wrong with saying, yeah, thanks for the invitation, but I kind of was just looking forward to some time alone tonight.
Yep.
Or I don't really feel like hanging out with anyone right now. Or I don't feel like playing video games right now. Or even I don't feel like hanging out with you right now.
And yeah, that's the harder one to say.
That sounds a little bit mean, I guess.
It's not, but it sounds it. I think that's the cultural thing, too.
Yeah.
Just saying, I'm not, I don't even know how to say it that would be polite. I don't know if there's a way.
I think there's a way.
If you want to say something,
I just feel like being alone tonight.
No, that's not what I mean. If you wanted to say, I don't want to hang out with you right now,
mm-hmm.
is there a way to say that nicely?
No, I think you're right, Mike. I think if I were in that situation, I would probably, if someone asked me to do something, I didn't want to hang out with them, but I wanted to hang out with someone else, I would probably say, oh, I'm sorry, but I made other plans.
Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of my point.
But that's not really truthful.
Well, right. If the reason that you don't want to hang out with them is because you don't want to hang out with them,
mm-hmm.
I would, in an ideal world, I'd say that's what you should tell them.
Mm-hmm.
However, as long as what you say is true, then it doesn't really matter. You could say, yeah, I want to be alone, because that's also true.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is, what you could, if I said, I don't really want to, hang out with you this evening.
Yeah.
I don't mean that mean. Yeah, I'll hang out with you next week. But it comes out mean. I don't know if there's a polite way to say it. I don't want to hang out with you.
Yeah, I guess, because it is kind of a rejection.
Right. Now, if there's a very specific reason, and especially if it's like an outlier, then maybe it's easier. Like, let's say your friend always laughs really loud and it attracts attention in public, just as an example.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to say, you guys, you're always so loud in public, and I'm not in the mood to deal with that tonight, so I don't want to hang out with you. So you might be able to get away with it if you have some specific example, but...
Well, I think I would probably handle that a little differently if that were the case. Like, if I had a friend who... I felt annoyed when I heard them laugh in public.
Right.
Instead of saying, I don't want to hang out with you tonight because you laugh too loudly, I would probably say, I would probably bring it up with them and just say, like, after they laugh.
Right.
Hey, I kind of wonder if people are annoyed by the volume of that laughter. Maybe you could tone it down a little bit. You know, just bringing it up with them?
That's true, when it happens, so...
Like, if there's a specific issue, you can always bring up that issue.
Yeah, but we're getting kind of into a tangent, because I just meant, use an example.
Mm-hmm.
I was... A tangent to a tangent, as usual. Because I was saying, maybe you could use a specific example as a way to say nicely that I don't want to hang out with you, and maybe... Mm.
Okay.
So, of course, if there's an issue, it would probably be better to deal with it directly when the issue happens.
Mm-hmm.
And not let it build up, but we're getting way, way off topic. So,
okay.
The guy says...
Well, we started off talking about...
Is the awkwardness my own fault for not being assertive about boundaries? I would say, if you feel awkward, yes, it's your fault, because no one can make you feel anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't use the word fault, I'd just say it's your, you know, responsibility.
Yeah, and your responsibility to get your own needs met.
Needs
and
met.
Your own happiness, yeah.
And then the question asker in the same question says, am I awkward... because I don't assert my boundaries. And I think he's answering his own question. Mm-hmm. Yes. The reason you're suggesting that is because you know that's the case.
Mm-hmm. I think even people who you may kind of see as socially awkward will get the hint eventually. You know, like if half the times, if they call you every day and want to hang out, and half the time you say, well... you know, I'm sorry. I just want a little time to myself today. We can hang out tomorrow or next week or something like that. Like if that keeps happening over and over again, I think they'll get the hint and stop calling you as much.
Right. Even if you just say, no, thanks. Do you want to go to the movies tonight? No, thanks. And don't give a reason and don't postpone it. Just say no, thanks. Then they'll eventually stop asking you because you never reciprocate. You never say yes. So it'll kind of turn into what it turns into, which is probably what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how would that look from the other end? It's not what they want. That's why they keep asking. But it's voluntary.
Well, maybe they're asking because they think you'll always say yes, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe they're asking because they're just looking for something to do. And they say, oh, well, I'll call the question asker because he always accepts my invitation to do something. Can we bring up one more thing?
We
talked about this before the show, Mike. So that's the issue of opportunity cost. So have you ever heard... in economics, there's a term called opportunity cost.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what that is?
Vaguely. You better describe it.
Oh, vaguely.
It.
Okay. Well, opportunity cost is basically the concept that no matter what you're doing, anything, there's always a cost that's associated with what you're not doing because you're doing whatever you are doing. So for example, if someone goes to college and they're trying to think about the cost of going to college, they'll usually factor in, you know, the cost of the tuition and the cost of their living expenses, books, stuff like that. But what they're not factoring in is, okay, if I were to instead choose to not go to college but get a full-time job instead, how much money would I be making at that job? Then they're foregoing that salary for the 4 years that it takes to go to college or whatever.
Right.
Now, that might be a good decision in the long run because they'll end up getting a skill that lets them do something they like more. Or it, you know, or
perhaps
maybe
they'll get a degree that lands them the same job that they would have got if they didn't go to college.
And they'll be $120,000
in debt
because they paid for college.
Right.
So that's a little bit of a tangent, but and there's some great work out there now about like kind of education inflation and people who go to college and kind of just end up with a bunch of debt and not really like useful skills. But maybe we can talk about that on another episode as well, but...
opportunity cost.
Yeah, the reason for bringing that up was opportunity cost. So I would say that opportunity cost applies to this situation that the question asker brought up, because if he's spending all this time hanging out with the sympathy friends, well, maybe he gets something out of that. He does enjoy their company, at least...
Sometimes.
At least in sometimes.
Yeah.
And he feels... that it's fulfilling because they're there for him when he needs them.
Or he thinks he's doing a good deed of some sort.
Thinks he's doing a good deed.
Okay.
Right. But you could be choosing to spend that time alone, developing your own skills or doing something that you enjoy just alone.
Being happy instead of mediocre.
Mm-hmm. Or you could be choosing to spend that time with other people who maybe are
friends
that you would enjoy more.
Right, right.
Or even, you know, spending that time with a like a romantic partner or something.
Right.
So there's always kind of an opportunity cost. And if you say that, you know, you hang out with these sympathy friends because you're bored and you have nothing else to do, well, then that's one thing. But if you're skipping out on stuff that you want to do with your free time that you would rather be doing, then I would say go for what makes you happy, right?
Yeah, not what makes someone else happy.
Right.
Now, if they coincide, great, but mm-hmm. not at your own expense.
Right, right. Absolutely.
All right.
So, yeah, I think you had some good insights in this question asker.
Also, very well asked, very well, you know, very literate and...
well articulated.
Yeah. Unlike my comment right there.
we can fix it up, Mike. can we bring up one last point about this?
Yep.
We kind of touched on this during the show, but there are levels of association, and this completely ties into one of the main themes in our show, which is like voluntary association, and he brought it up too. So what he was saying is that friendships are voluntary associations, right? You don't force someone to be friends with you. You know, you want to convince them to be friends with you by mm-hmm. hopefully
being
a good,
nice or
good
being
person
fun or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, people only have so many really close friends in their life, but that's kind of stratified, right? Like, most people probably have a few best friends, mm-hmm. and then outside of that...
How ironic. Can you have more than one best of anything? But anyway, go on.
Yeah, I guess I meant best...
Good friends.
Relative to...
Yes.
The friends that aren't so good.
Right.
But, yes. But yeah, you're right, Mike.
But you're right.
So they have a few of their friends who they are the closest to, let's put it that way.
Yes.
And then they have some friends that... maybe they're not as close to, maybe they don't see as often or whatever. And then they have probably hundreds of acquaintances or business contacts or whatever. I think that the word friend has taken on kind of a new connotation in this society that we live in today. Do you think that's accurate,
Mike? I completely
agree.
And why? What's an example? What's the example we thought of?
Well, we were talking about this before, and we said that when you connect with someone on a social network, like Facebook or LinkedIn or, you know, any kind of Twitter or whatever, usually people use the word friended. Like, oh, this person friended me, or I friended them, or we friended each other.
Yeah.
And you may not even know that person.
Yeah.
All you did was make a virtual connection to them.
Hey, this person friended me. Who is it? I don't know.
Yeah. Exactly. Sometimes it's complete stranger.
Yeah.
Basically.
And you pointed out that in, I'll say real life, but in physical mm-hmm. contact, you never use the
word friended.
Yeah. You don't go to a party and then, you know, the next day, you know, tell your mom, hey, I friended three people at that party. I met three friends, maybe.
Yeah. And when I just heard you say that, I was thinking like, oh, I met three people at a party and then hooked up with them on Facebook. That would be friended.
Yeah. Well, interesting.
You might say, we met each other at a party and we befriended each other, or we became friends, we met each other, but you wouldn't say... Friended. So I think that there's an additional definition of friend now that there wasn't before social networking became so big.
I think there's a different definition, and that's the verb mm-hmm. of friend. But I think you're right. There's also a different connotation, and that is that it's that friend or friendships are becoming less, you know, intimate, less close, less mm-hmm. meaningful because of this new use of the word friend, right?
Yeah.
If suddenly
or what's considered a friendship
isn't
the same as what used to be before social networking.
Right. Yeah. So if you're in your, you know, group of friends, you know, 20 years ago, you probably wouldn't consider somebody who you've never seen their picture and you don't know their name a friend.
Right.
Now you do.
Exactly.
Wow.
By the way, if somebody named Geike Marski sends you a friendship request on Facebook, don't add him. He's a creep. Right, Mike?
Oh, he tried to friend me, too.
He tried to friend me with a sketchy message. No, I'm just kidding. But,
well, thank you.
But yeah, well, okay. I don't think we're done with this point yet, which was, I was just going to say, this ties into ostracism and levels of association too, because I think people choose to become closest with the best people they could find, just like they choose the best romantic partner they can find, right?
Yes, again, there's opportunity costs and there's weighing mm-hmm. risk and whatnot. But yes, in general, I'd say yes.
Yeah. And I think that's fine. And that's kind of healthy, right? Like,
sure.
They're just...
Why wouldn't you want what's absolutely best for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean...
Voluntary, I guess.
I suppose, like, when you do that, when you choose to associate with someone on a very close, very deep level, you're sending them kind of a market signal that, hey, your behavior is pleasing to me. I like how you live your life. Mm-hmm. I feel that we have things in common and we have similar values. I think that's what you're saying to a person when you choose to spend a lot of time with them and you choose to
be loyal and be
in relationships with them, whether it be business partnerships or romantic or whatever.
Or friended.
But with people, you know, who you may not choose to spend a lot of time with, I think you're also by default kind of sending a message to them too. Like, well, I'm not choosing to spend all my time with you because there are other people who I basically value more, right? People who you just have around as acquaintances, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree.
So I guess the conclusion there is that, you know, there are kind of market mechanisms for giving feedback about people's behavior. And those are, you know, how much time you choose to spend with them, how closely you choose to associate with them, and the activities that you do with them.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see anything wrong with that. I think that's how
humans work.
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically a marketplace of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're picking up certain ideas based on the people that you associate with. So that's what I was about to say. And having sympathy friends is almost like subsidizing certain things in a way.
Yeah.
Right? Because they may have ideas that you don't like or behaviors that you don't like, but you still choose to invest your time in them.
Right. And that time could have been invested in something that you do like.
Right. And so I think that it's important if you do choose to spend time with those people that you don't subsidize their behavior. Make sure you talk to them about it when they do something that you don't like.
All right. Thank you for asking the question and for listening to the show.
Yeah. Thanks very much. We certainly do appreciate having you as our audience.
Mm-hmm.
And big thanks to the Liberty Radio Network, too. I think we moved up in the rotation recently.
Yay for us.
So we're going to do our best to entertain you and make sure that that was a fruitful association for all of us, right? Anyway, thanks for listening. And if you have a relationship question, what can you do, Mike?
You can write it on a piece of paper and then wipe your butt with it and flush it.
Wow, I wouldn't recommend that.
No, I wouldn't recommend it, but it is something they can do. You can send it to
us. Send them a market signal and not associate with people who do that.
You can send it to us as an email and questions@porktherapy.com. If you go to our website, porktherapy.com, there's all kinds of stuff. You can ask us questions and learn how to contact us and listen to all our old shows, etc.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's all.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
They're two crazy porks who host a show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench. Cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy. Advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh. Did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork therapy, scabbly-dee-bop, shabba-dooey, you revel in hilarity, it's pork therapy.